picture this. You're crossing the Rockies on a bluebird morning. Not a cloud in the sky. You've climbed to 13,500 to clear the ridgeline with room to spare, and everything feels great. Actually, it feels better than great. You're relaxed, loose. You catch yourself grinning at nothing. And that right there, that little glow of everything is fine, is one of the most dangerous feelings in aviation. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hangar. Today we're going to talk about a regulation that a lot of pilots memorize for the written test, recite once for the examiner, and then never really think about again. Federal Aviation Regulation 91211, Supplemental Oxygen, and I want to talk about it not as a number to memorize, but as a rule that is quietly trying to keep you alive. Let's walk through this together. Before we do, a quick shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. First solo? There's a coin for that. Private, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter, the ones you worked hard for. Take a look, AviationSoul.com. Okay, supplemental oxygen. Here's the thing, nobody really drives home when you're a student. The regulation is not the hazard. The regulation is the fence the FAA built around the hazard, and the hazard has a name. Hypoxia, your brain running short on oxygen, and the reason it's so dangerous is that it doesn't feel like danger. It feels like that grin at 13.5, it feels good, right up until you can't think straight. And the cruel part is that the very organ you'd use to notice the problem is the organ that's starving. So let's start with the actual rule, because it's more precise than most people remember, and the precision matters. 91211 breaks the sky into three layers, and I want you to think of them as three doors you pass through as you climb. The first door is 12,500 feet. Below that, no oxygen required, fly all day. But the moment you climb above 12,500, a clock starts. The rule says the required minimum flight crew, that's the pilot flying, has to use supplemental oxygen for any portion of the flight at those altitudes that lasts more than 30 minutes. Read that carefully. It's not above 12,500, period. It's above 12,500 for more than 30 minutes. So the regulation gives you a half-hour window. You can pop up to 13,000 to top a ridge or clear some building weather, and as long as you're back down under 12.5 within 30 minutes, you're legal without the mask. The second door is 14,000 feet, and at 14,000, the grace period is gone. Above 14,000 feet, the required flight crew must use supplemental oxygen the entire time. No 30-minute window? No, it's just for a few minutes. From the moment you pass 14,000, the pilot is on oxygen, full stop. The third door is 15,000 feet, and here the rule stops being just about the crew. Above 15,000 feet, every occupant of the aircraft must be provided with supplemental oxygen, provided with your passengers in the back. The regulation makes you responsible for the fact that oxygen is available to them, so there's your ladder. 12.5 crew after 30 minutes, 14 crew the whole time, 15, everybody gets it available. 12.5, 14, 15. Say it out loud a few times on your next drive. 12.5, 14, 15. Now, here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. Every one of those numbers is a cabin pressure altitude. In the airplanes most of us fly, the unpressurized singles and light twins, cabin altitude is just your altitude. What you see on the altimeter is what your lungs are breathing. But if you ever move up into a pressurized airplane, and I hope you do, the rule follows the cabin, not the airplane. You could be cruising at flight level 230 with the cabin, comfortably pressurized down to 8,000, and you're perfectly legal with no mask, because your lungs think they're at 8,000. It's the cabin that counts. But let's stay in the world most of us actually fly in. The unpressurized world. Because that's where 91211 does its real work, and that's where pilots get hurt. I want to tell you about how hypoxia actually shows up. Because the examiner is going to ask you about this on your check ride, and more importantly, the mountains are going to ask you about it someday for real. The insidious thing about the kind of hypoxia we're talking about, the kind you get from thin air at altitude, is the order in which it takes things from you. It doesn't start with your body, it starts with your judgment. The first thing to go is the higher reasoning. The part of you that would look at the situation and say, hey, something's wrong here. That's the first thing the thin air switches off. Then comes a false sense of well-being, euphoria, That grin at 13.5, your fingernails and your lips might turn a little bluish, but you won't notice, because noticing is exactly the function that's failing. Then the tunnel vision. Your peripheral vision narrows down like you're looking through a paper towel tube. Your reaction time stretches out. Simple tasks get hard. Reading a chart, dialing a frequency, doing the arithmetic on a descent, and by the time you feel genuinely bad, if you feel it at all, you may already be well past the point where you can fix it on your own. Here's the number that ought to get your attention, your time of useful consciousness. That's the window between when your oxygen supply gets cut off and when you can no longer take useful action to help yourself. At 15,000 feet, that might be a half hour or more, plenty of time. But that window collapses fast as you climb at 18,000. It's maybe 20 or 30 minutes. Up around 25,000 feet, if a pressurized cabin suddenly lets go, you might have 3 to 5 minutes. And higher than that, it's measured in seconds. That's why the airline pilots are drilled to get that mask on immediately in a decompression, not calmly, not after they finish the checklist. First, because the higher you are, the less time the thin air is willing to give you to think about it. Now let me connect this back to the regulation, because once you understand the hazard, 91.2.11 stops looking like bureaucracy and starts looking like somebody's hard-won experience written into the rules. Why 12,500 with a 30-minute grace period? Because at those modest altitudes for most healthy people, the effects come on slowly and mildly, and a short excursion is genuinely low risk. Why does the grace period vanish at 14,000? Because the numbers get worse faster, and the FAA decided that's the altitude where they're no longer willing to let you gamble with a clock. And why does everybody on board get oxygen at 15? Because your passengers didn't sign up to manage their own physiology, and you, the pilot in command, are responsible for them. Let's make this practical. Let's walk through a real scenario, because that's how this stuff actually sticks. Say you're planning a cross-country from the flatlands out to a friend's place on the far side of a mountain range. You pull up the terrain, and to cross safely with reasonable clearance, you're looking at needing to spend about 45 minutes at 13,500 feet, legal cruising altitude VFR, going westbound. That works out. Now think about 91.2.11, 13.5 is above 12,500, and 45 minutes is more than 30 minutes. So the regulation says the pilot must be on supplemental oxygen for that crossing. Not maybe, must. Here's where a lot of pilots make a quiet, dangerous decision. They think, well, 30 minutes is the limit, so I'll just plan to be up there for 29 minutes and pop back down. And technically, sometimes you can thread that needle. But let me ask you the question. The mountains will ask, what happens when you get up there and the winds aren't what forecast said? What happens when there's a downdraft on the lee side and you can't descend when you planned? What happens when you're having such a nice time you lose track? Because remember, losing track is the very first symptom. The regulation is a floor, not a flight plan. The smart move, the safe move, isn't to see how close to the edge of the rule you can operate. It's to carry oxygen, put the cannula on, and cross that ridge with a clear head and margin to spare. Being legal and being safe are two different summits, and the good pilots climb to the higher one. And let me say something about equipment, because I don't want anyone thinking this requires a big, expensive system. For the altitudes we fly VFR, you don't need a fighter pilot mask. A simple portable oxygen bottle with a nasal cannula, the little tube that sits under your nose, is enough up to 18,000 feet. Above 18,000, you need a mask, but that's a different conversation for a different airplane. A basic portable system with a good regulator, something like a pulse demand system that only delivers oxygen when you inhale, will stretch a small bottle across a long trip. It's not exotic, it's not that expensive, relative to everything else in this hobby. And it is worth every penny the first time you cross high terrain and step out of the airplane feeling sharp instead of wrung out with a headache. Now, a word for my night flyers, because this one surprises people. The regulation is a hard floor, but your body doesn't wait for the regulation. The FAA itself, in the Aeronautical Information Manual, recommends that you use supplemental oxygen above 5,000 feet at night. 5,000. Because the cells in your eyes that give you night vision are some of the most oxygen-hungry tissue in your whole body, and they start to suffer from mild hypoxia long before your thinking does. So, on a dark cross-country over the desert at 9 or 10,000 feet, you are technically, legally, completely fine with no oxygen. But your night vision is already degraded, and a little supplemental oxygen would sharpen it right back up. The regulation and your physiology are not the same fence. Respect both. Let's bring it home to the checkride for a minute. because I know some of you are prepping right now. The examiner is looking for two things here, and they're different. First, can you recite the regulation cleanly? 12,500 to 14,000 crew on oxygen after 30 minutes. Above 14,000, crew the whole time. Above 15,000, oxygen provided for every occupant. Know it cold, that's the airman certification standards, knowledge element, and it's a gimme if you've done the work. But the second thing is where the real airmen separate themselves. The examiner wants to hear you talk about hypoxia as a decision-making problem, not just a number. If they give you a scenario, a high cross-country, a passenger who's a smoker or who's dehydrated or who's just getting over a cold, all of which make hypoxia worse, they want to hear you reason through it. They want to hear you say, the reg is my legal minimum, but here's how I'd actually manage the risk. That's aeronautical decision-making. That's the whole ball game. Give them the number, then show them the judgment behind it. And here's one last practical takeaway you can use on your very next flight, even if you never leave the pattern. Learn your own hypoxia symptoms. Everyone's are a little different. Some people get a headache. Some get tingling in the fingertips. Some get that euphoria. Some get weirdly warm. Many flight schools and the FAA's own aeromedical folks offer altitude chamber rides or reduced oxygen training devices where you get to experience your own personal onset of hypoxia in a completely safe, controlled environment, with someone watching you the whole time. If you ever get the chance to do one, take it, because knowing exactly what your own brain feels like when it's running short, recognizing your personal warning sign, is a piece of self-knowledge that a regulation can never give you. So the next time you're planning a flight that brushes up against 12,500 feet, don't just check the box. Remember the grin at 13,500. Remember that the first thing to go is the part of you that would notice. And carry the oxygen not because 91:11 says you have to, but because you've decided to be the pilot who lands with a clear head. Thanks to the FAA's regulations and the Aeronautical Information Manual for the numbers, and to the aeromedical folks who study this stuff so the rest of us can climb with confidence, you can find us anytime at radiohanger.com. Fly high if the trip calls for it. Just bring something to breathe. I'll see you back in the pattern.